The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
We're just a mere couple of days away from baseball being played. I'm Steve Zinsmeister with Derek Montilla and Cody Fincher on the Ain't No Fang Podcast. Boys, we're just 2 days away from the opening day of spring training for the Arizona Diamondbacks. They will take on the Rockies on Sunday for their first game. Derek, you're going to be there.
I will be there covering the game.
There's not going to be a lot of people at these spring training games this year, so having you there is just extra special.
Oh, I'm excited. I just can't wait to be back out at the yard and to see people playing baseball.
Absolutely. At ArizonaSports.com today, you will see on the front page that we at the Ain't No Fang podcast went through and predicted the opening day roster for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I will preface this by saying a roster decision that was made today already has impacted our predictions and probably debunked us.
Of course it did. That's what happens. Yeah. Anytime we put out any content at all, whether it's the show or written content, the Diamondbacks find a way to immediately make us look like fools.
So go check it out. Go read it. And it's already probably wrong. So
Steve's answers are wrong. It's Steve's answers.
It's my section.
That's true.
That
it's just
affects.
You.
Yeah,
it's just Steve.
That's true. So I thought what we could do is just roll through this position by position, talk about who we know will make the roster, who we think could make the roster, and talk about some of the position battles that are going on through spring. We cool with that?
Absolutely.
All right, let's start with where the article starts, which is first base. This is Cody's section.
Yes.
I want to set you up with this because we know pretty much easily who the starter is going to be, but a new recent addition to the Diamondbacks could make things interesting.
Yeah, well, first of all, the starter is going to be Christian Walker. It's pretty simple. Since Paul Goldschmidt was traded, Christian Walker has done really well, and he's actually pretty much locked down that position ever since Goldie was traded to the Cardinals. We had that discussion where after the first year after that trade happened, Walker's numbers were pretty – offensive numbers anyway – were pretty consistent with what Goldie's were that first year in St. Louis. And then when you add on top, Christian Walker's actually a really good defender at first base too, even earning a Gold Glove finalist position in 2019. So yeah, Christian Walker is going to be your starter at first base. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But as you mentioned, Steve, I think we're going to see a lot of Asdrubal Cabrera at first base. Just looking at his numbers from last year, of the games he played in the field, he played mostly at first base when he wasn't, you know, he also DH'd a lot, of course, in the 60-game season where the universal DH was in place. And then he also played some games at third, but he played primarily when he did play in the field, played at first base. So when Walker needs a day off, I expect to see Asdrubal Cabrera get in there. He is a switch hitter, so matchups aren't really, I mean, they are. He probably has, you know, splits either way, like he hits righties better than lefties, whatever, but you don't have to worry about it as much with him because he is a switch hitter. So yeah, I expect to see Cabrera at first a lot.
Well, I think that the Diamondbacks are versatile in their infielders. They have
single position.
So many utility guys that it's going to be hard to say who plays where, but I think it's a safe bet that we'll probably see him at first more than we'll see him anywhere else. It all depends. I know Lovullo just loves to keep his lineup fresh, and he loves to, you know, switch things up almost to a fault, right? Where you kind of wonder if guys could get more comfortable if they had more regular playing time or stayed in the same, you know, like some other players on other teams get to do, where they don't really get a day off almost the entire season, not at least as regularly as some of the starters on the Diamondbacks.
Christian Walker's contract, I believe, is still worth under $1 million, isn't it?
What a deal. What a deal.
I know he's pushing 30 if he's not already 30.
I believe he is 30 already.
But yeah, that's got to be one of the more valuable first basemen in baseball just based on what he makes and the production that he has and the defensive versatility.
You know, the thing about it is I know we've harped on it before due to losing Goldie and having him come into Goldschmidt's position, but when you really look at it, it just proves that sometimes in baseball, it's not worth the money necessarily to pay somebody a huge contract when you can find another player that will put up maybe not as good of stats, but very similar stats in the case of Christian Walker.
In 2020, Christian Walker is in his arbitration years right now.
Yes.
So Last year, he earned $589,000.
Which is just above the league minimum.
And then now he is entering his arbitration years for the next 3 years, and he'll be an unrestricted free agent in 2025 when he's 34 years old.
So he'll make more.
He is 30 this year.
His luxury tax salary is $575,000.
Yeah. He'll make more in arbitration, but we're talking like single digit millions. We're not talking like 10 million a year. So that's a pretty good player to have at first base. Second base, we obviously know that the Diamondbacks top player, Ketel Marte, top position player at the least, he moves around quite a bit. We talked about that positional flexibility. I can't think of another team off the top of my head, and I'll see if you guys can think of one that moves their best player around the diamond as much as the Diamondbacks do, because Ketel Marte plays mostly second base.
Interesting.
2019, he played almost half the season in center field, and it looks like they don't have a center fielder right now, so he might do that a lot. And I think we're going to see him at shortstop as well. Is there a comp to that around the league?
I don't know. I just wonder if that's more of Torey Lovullo and his using people in different positions, or if it's Marte just being agreeable to playing wherever Lovullo wants him.
He's got to have a preference, doesn't he?
He definitely seemed like when he was asked about it that he wants to win a gold glove. And the only way he can do that is by playing second base.
Yeah.
I've seen him in the outfield. He plays center field very well. It's not ideal to have him out there. You know, we want him playing the natural position that he plays. And Chase Field with the artificial turf, it's just not great to have our best player out there in center field where there's a high likelihood of an injury or at least a lot of wear and tear on the body.
I think when he's at second base, he might be the best second baseman in baseball. I don't have a ton of names that are coming to mind. DJ LeMahieu when he plays second base, but he's nowhere near as good defensively or as mobile, I wouldn't say. So, yeah, Ketel Marte is a super good second baseman and an above-average center fielder, I think, in my opinion, and an above-average shortstop as well. The other name to keep, two names to keep an eye on at second base, we're predicting Andy Young will make the roster again. He debuted last season, plays second and third, and I think he could be a backup at both positions. The other name to watch is Josh Van Meter.
Since we were talking about contracts a little while ago, I do just want to point out that Ketel Marte is on a five-year, $24 million deal. And when you think of it,
is that what it currently is? Wasn't it a 7-year deal originally?
Yes. It was a 7-year deal, right? But he has
five years left
on it, where he's an unrestricted free agent in 2025.
Wow.
With a yearly salary of $4.8 million.
How do you feel if you're Ketel?
I don't know.
You're locked up to a pretty low number for your talent level.
I think if you're Ketel, you get paid on your next contract and you get the next big contract. I just don't know sometimes by comparison, because these guys aren't superstars sometimes in their own head. They're just a baseball player, right? So we saw him have a breakout year, and we've seen him be a tremendous player at times, right? But we've also seen him have down, you know, periods of downtime where he's not, you know, his normal self. Last year was an off season where he wasn't playing up to the standards that we're used to seeing of him.
So just looking at his contract, this year he's under contract for $6 million. Next year, it's $8 million, and then the Diamondbacks hold club options on him for 2023 and 2024. 2023 is $10 million. 2024 is $12
million. So at most $12 million, which we can all agree he's worth now in the moment.
And that's his age 30 season. He'll be a free agent in 2025 when he's 31.
Yeah, they bet big on him early, and I think it's definitely
paid
off for them.
That was one of those Paul Goldschmidt type contracts where they gave it to him really early for cheap.
Yeah,
and
because they could
working
see,
out.
They could see he's going to be a special player, and they were definitely right. You're not always right on that, but they also didn't commit enough money that it would have been a huge mistake to sign him.
I don't think it's out of the question that at second base too, we could see Asdrubal Cabrera. He's played there in the past, but he doesn't have the range anymore. He's more of a corner guy like we talked about earlier. And I'm going to put this out there. I think we see more of Eduardo Escobar at second base this season just because of the shifting of Marte to center field. Mm-hmm. And they have options at third base behind Escobar that might be better than the options behind Marte at second base. Behind Marte, you have Andy Young and Josh Van Meter, still pretty unproven there. But at third base, you have Asdrubal Cabrera, who I was surprised when I read in their press release, that guy is seventh in RBI since he was traded to the Nationals in August of 2019.
2 years ago.
7th in baseball in RBIs. That's pretty crazy, but we'll talk more about him as well coming up. Let's move to shortstop. Derek, this is where you wrote up a section. Really, there's only one guy to talk about.
Yeah, it's really just Nick Ahmed. I mean, we're going to see, obviously, other guys play shortstop, like Josh Rojas, again, another capable utility infielder that is capable of handling that position. There's just nobody as good defensively as Nick Ahmed. He had one of his worst statistical years last season as far as fielding goes, but you got to at least kind of just scratch that off to it being that weird season. 2020 is a hard year to really look at stats and say anything great one way or another. If they're good stats, then yes, I'm sure you want to hold on to them. Like his offensive stats, essentially he ended the season with his highest batting average of his career. It's still not anything that's going to make any big waves or anything. You know, I think he hit 266, but he is definitely their guy. He is their union representative, and, you know, he is just a leader for that team, both on the field and off. He's also become one of the longest tenured players on the team, so I think he has that going for him as well for leadership. So I don't see anybody cutting into that playing time aside from for days off.
When Nick needs a day off, who gets the opportunity at shortstop?
Good question. I think, like Derek said, Josh Rojas is a good candidate for backup short. I think, I mean, it all depends on who is in center that day, I guess. But
yeah. Cattell might.
Cattell can do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if Andy Young is really a shortstop. Probably not. But
Josh Van Meter. Another guy that can play shortstop.
It's going to be interesting. I think it all really depends on, hey, where do we want Cattell today? Like, that's pretty much what's, are we going to want him in center? Is he playing second? What's going on?
We agreed we do have Josh Rojas making the roster, so I think he's probably penciled in as the backup, but we're all pretty much on the same page that Cattell Marte can play shortstop a little bit this season, and I think that's acceptable. Moving on to third base, Bear.
Yes.
Really, there's just one name there as well, but what gets interesting is the backups behind it. But let's talk about Eduardo Escobar.
Right. Eduardo Escobar, man, I can't see any situation where he's not your starting third baseman on opening day, but he had just a miserable 2020. Torrey Lovello admitted last year he showed up to the summer camp out of shape.
Yep.
I think he was very concerned about COVID. Just watching how he was conducting himself it was nothing negative, but I felt like he was more concerned about where his mask was in the batter's box than he was hitting, but I understand that.
There was a lot of unknown. There was a
lot
of him just being uncomfortable at the plate, it seemed
and
like.
He had that health scare in the offseason in his home country. But, man, just production-wise, last year, 212, four homers, 20 RBIs, just not good at all. But if he can get back to – if he's comfortable, if he's in shape, he's 1 year removed from a – 2019 where he hit 269, 35 home runs, and 118 RBI.
Yeah, that's so crazy RBI numbers.
Yeah.
Something that's going to get talked about this season, and I think it's a little bit unfortunate, but it's going to happen, is the fact that he is expiring contract at the end of the season. So he makes $7.5 million this season. He's 32. The fact that he's going to be coming off the books unless they somehow extend him, he could be a name that gets tossed around at the trade deadline, much like he was when the Diamondbacks acquired him.
That's right. And I think that he could still offer quite a bit to a team, especially considering that, as we've talked about in the past, he's kind of a late bloomer for the season. Usually struggles a little bit when the season starts out, but then when he gets going, his numbers kind of go crazy for the second half of the season. That could be big for a team making a playoff push that is in need of that third baseman just to kind of put them over the hump. I also haven't heard a lot of players on this team say that they would die for Torrey Lovello, though. And considering that he said that during a press conference one time, I have a hard time getting rid of a guy that says, I would die for the manager on this team.
Right.
You know, there's just something about his personality, the way that he embraced this team and his teammates and his love for the Valley. He really likes being here. My hope is that it doesn't happen because he's been such a reliable third baseman. And I know that the Diamondbacks, once again, have a lot of guys available at that position that could probably step in and play it. Josh Rojas, again, that's another place that he could find a permanent home. Wyatt Matheson, another guy that's just, mm-hmm. you know, getting ready to, it seems like.
He's close. He's a tweener right now.
Right, right. You know.
We don't project him to make the opening day roster, but I could see him being up at some point.
It's all depending on the usage, injuries, a lot of other things could factor in. This team isn't very deep. That's one thing that you can say negatively about the entire team. They have a lot of guys that can play a lot of positions, but as far as depth goes, you're exactly right. There's just this squadron of guys that aren't ready yet but are so close to being ready that you don't really want to, especially in a season like this, make any big commitments to any free agents or anything that's going to take up your long-term money or take away that ability to make that big free agent signing once those young guys come up and start playing well and move on to, as Steve has talked about, that second and third phase of building a championship.
Once you
contender.
Get your core, right. Then what's the next step? We're not there yet.
Yeah.
I think we'll also see Asdrubal Cabrera at third base. And like you were saying earlier, Steve, since he joined the Nationals, August of 2019.
Not that long ago.
Yeah. 71 RBI since then. They're the seventh most in the National League. And listen to these names, that the only names that are in front of him. Freddie Freeman,
awesome.
87 RBIs. Marcelo Zuna between St. Louis and the Braves, 83. Jeez. Corey Seager, 81. Juan Soto, his teammate, 76. Pete Alonso, 75.
This is Asdrubal Cabrera, right?
And Bryce Harper.
Not the name that you just said. Whatever you just said, no, Asdrubal. It's not him. Asdrubal Cabrera, yes.
I said Asdrubal.
That's what I heard.
Asdrubal Cabrera is seventh in RBIs in Major League Baseball since he was traded in
the National League.
Oh, sorry, in National League. Behind those names.
Yep.
Guys who have won MVPs. Guys
who are making
$33
million a year.
Yeah.
It just makes you wonder because a lot like Eduardo Escobar's numbers, right? His numbers with the RBIs were nuts, but his other offensive numbers aren't anything. Like, his home runs were impressive. He was even impressed by the number of home runs he hit after the season was over. Like, he was basically like, that's never going to happen.
Like, wait a minute, I did that?
Yeah, but he was...
How'd you do that? I don't know.
I mean, a lot of it is the guys in front of him, right? Getting on base. So even though his batting average wasn't, you know, ridiculously high, he just had a lot of opportunities to drive guys in. So I wonder if Cabrera did that. If that's the case, though, what a great guy to have rotating around the infield and playing... Often, he's still going to get plenty of playing time, even as a non-starter, because of his versatility.
So here's probably the most controversial thing that we predicted in the opening day roster, and it's a catcher. We all know who the starter is going to be, but it's more about who's the backup. And I'm the only one of the three of us who did not agree with this, so I'm kind of saying this in protest. But Derek, walk us through the big decision that you made at the catcher position.
I think it's just a matter of which direction that the Diamondbacks go. I will say that based on their mixture of veterans and young players, it does definitely make a case that Stephen Vogt is going to be the backup catcher for this team. I just like what Dalton Varsho did last season, and I think that the Diamondbacks are just big fans of what he was able to bring to the team. He's a spark plug. He's one of these guys that comes in there and does a lot of things.
You just like him because he bunted against the shift.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
Checks in the mail, Bear.
I wasn't going to bring that up. I will say, though, that they sounded like they were more committed to him playing catcher. They
it does
that.
Sound that way.
Right, and that would make sense. Again, he might be suffering from the fact that he is so versatile like other guys. He becomes a utility guy and just kind of gets moved around the field, whereas his natural position is a catcher. He's been a very good catcher in the minor leagues, and I think they want to keep developing him down that path. I was just taking a swing here at backup because I know that Vogt got into camp late due to the positive COVID diagnosis, and I was thinking that that door could be open. They seem to be allowing guys to compete for these positions. I don't think anything's set in stone. I don't think Vogt gets it just because of his seniority and his his experience,
and that's good because when you're like this team and you got some veterans around, but a majority of the team of this team's depth, if you want to call it, are young guys trying to come up and prove what they can do.
Right,
they don't really have, like we've been saying, they don't really have that superstar player besides maybe Ketel Marte, and I mean Madison Bumgarner is a big name. Zach Gallen is probably on his way to becoming that superstar pitcher, but a lot of these guys, they're young and they're trying to make the team. And I a little competition never hurt anybody.
I think it's important to remember Dalton Varsho never played in AAA. Because of the lack of a minor league season last year, he was at the extended site or whatever they called it, and he didn't get that opportunity to develop at the AAA level before making his major league debut. He did not hit well at all at the major league levels in his small sample size, but he was also playing center field.
Left field.
He was playing left field. I think he has way more upside as a catcher, so I love this idea of him being the backup. I just think it would be so much easier for them to keep Steven Vogt in his position. By the way, he's already back at camp, so it's not like he missed a lot. He's also a veteran, so he doesn't need to show up to camp and be there for the first 2 weeks and everything's hunky-dory. I think it'd be easier to send Varsho down to AAA, at least for a little while. We know he's going to be back at some point this season.
I think that's when they said they're committed to him at catcher. I definitely take that. You know, it can go either way. I take it as, we're committed to him as catcher. We're going to have him come into camp and catch, see what he can do, and compete for the position, right? I think Carson Kelly is a lock, like we've talked about with a lot of
guys. Yeah, we haven't even talked about the guy who's starting.
Right,
yeah.
But Carson Kelly is a lock as the starter. He's developed a rapport with the pitching staff. He has a history with both Zach Gallen and Weaver based on their time together in the St. Louis Cardinals organization. There's just a lot of things there that have gone right for Carson, and I think he's going to continue to be the everyday catcher for the most part. I just think Varsho is, you know, he had his time up here last season. I thought he showed what he can do at other positions, but I would like to see what he can do at catcher. And I think he has a good chance based on his numbers in the minor leagues to at least impress and compete. I don't think it's going to be just an outright position given a vote.
If not this year, where, I mean, I hate to be a downer, but they're probably not going to win the division. Maybe you want to try some stuff.
What do you mean, Bear?
I don't know, Derek.
What did you just say, Steve? He's writing them off already?
I don't know.
The season hasn't even hasn't even started yet.
I said
yet.
The division. They could still make the playoffs. But
what? I don't
do
know.
You not see what the Padres and Dodgers have done?
I don't want to. I've put the blinders on and avoided as much as possible.
With Varsho listed as backup catcher in our prediction, that leaves an opening in the outfield. So
correct.
What does the outfield look like aside from the two guys that we know will be starting in the corners?
Like you said, we know that it's going to be David Peralta, which, by the way, I found out, I watched today that Cup of Coffee on Fox Sports Arizona, where Steve Berthiaume interviews players.
Right.
And Steve told the story of how he came up with the freight train name, which he gave to David Peralta, which was interesting.
He had to pat himself on the back for that.
Yeah,
he
had, well, David Peralta
hey,
actually,
remember how I gave you an awesome nickname?
No, he actually asked him, like, why did you call me that? Because he didn't know until this interview why he
it worked out.
That. Yeah, worked out well. But yeah, I think that we're going to see Cole Calhoun and Peralta in the corners, and it really just comes down to center field. Right now, it feels like without any moves happening where they bring in a free agent on a short-term deal, that we're going to see Ketel Marte as their center fielder. And I don't like that. I don't want that to happen. I think that there's just something different about this team where he's at second base. It's like you said, he's one of the best second basemen in the league. That's natural.
He made the All-Star game as a second baseman.
That's where we want to see him play.
When he was playing half in center, half at second.
Right. But I think that the names brought up were very unsettling to me because Lavallo basically said the depth chart from that point on in center field is LeCastro and Stuart Fairchild, who's currently not on the roster.
Came over in the deal with the Reds for Archie Bradley.
Right. And he sounded very confident about that. And that was prior to camp starting. So I don't know what exactly he knows about Fairchild. It was interesting that he brought him up considering that, you know, right now their depth chart at center field is Marte, LeCastro, and Varsho. But with the, you know, and the information about Varsho being a catcher from Mike Hazen, that's going to take him out of that spot and basically leaves LeCastro right there as the only
role for Fairchild wouldn't be significant. Because if, let's say Marte plays half the season at second base and half the season in center field, that leaves 50% of the at-bats, let's call it 300 at-bats, for whoever's behind him in center field.
Sure.
Tim LeCastro is probably going to take a lot of that, 200 to 300.
And he's going to get hit by 150 of them.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Leads the league in hit by pitch.
Gets on base, right?
Quite frankly, I think Tim LeCastro deserves that opportunity to be the kind of supplemental center fielder.
I agree with that.
He's certainly one of the fastest players in Major League Baseball. I think he's been clocked as the fastest player in Major League Baseball.
The thing I like about him is he has this tenacity, not only to get hit by pitches, but to also get better. Like, he seems like the kind of guy that's really focused on working at whatever he needs to do his job, to play his position better. I think that, you know, there's a lot that he probably learned last season, and, you know, getting plenty of playing time out in the outfield definitely is at Chase Field, which is just such a weird place to play.
Yeah.
Centered field.
A lot of weird caroms and
that,
angles.
That porch.
Being
under that porch is ridiculously intimidating. If you've ever been on the field and been underneath that porch, there's times where I look up at that and I think even an easy fly ball that went out to the warning track in center field is going to be wonky just because of the way that overhangs at center field. So, it's definitely something that takes some time to get used to and understand the dimensions and the way the ball bounces and plays out there. I just don't know. I still feel like other people know something that we don't. I still feel like some sort of free agent signing is imminent. And, you know, some of the things that have been said directly, like, almost confirm it, while also saying that they can't confirm anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's the two boldest decisions that we've made in these roster predictions were Varsho at catcher, which, you know, anecdotally, it sounds like they want to do. And then Stuart Fairchild in center field, who, like you said, not currently on the roster, but they're talking about him like he could compete. He could have a role there. So there's anecdotal evidence to point us in that direction. But we're taking the leap of faith on this.
We are, because I have seen them lie to my face so many times.
And they will continue.
And they will continue to lie to my face. And that's okay, because they're the ones that try to win baseball games, not me. I just think that sometimes they might say things that they, you know, that they really mean, but then the situation changes. They've talked about some of the pitchers, for instance, that we suspect might be used as bullpen guys. Some of the guys that have been in the system for a while and are starting pitchers, but might get that opportunity at the bullpen on a major league level. And they directly named certain guys that are prime candidates for that, like Doop and Taylor
right.
Widener, as being guys that are going to get stretched out.
Well, we want to get into that. Let's talk pitchers for a moment. Bear, talk to me about the starting rotation. Is it as simple as it seems on paper?
I think that it is. Obviously, you have Madison Bumgarner and Zach Gallen. They'll be in the top two somewhere. It's unclear who right. starts opening day and who doesn't.
It's 1 and 1A there.
Gallen is starting Sunday, opening
day
for spring training.
Yes, starting opening day.
Yeah, Torrey Lovello announced that today on 98.7 FM on Bickley Murata.
By the way, Gallen had a very, I mean, he acknowledged that it's a big honor to start on, you know, opening day, but
right.
he also said, like, after that, every day,
yeah.
and that's one of my favorite quotes. He's like, every day you're the ace. Every day you go out there, you're yep. the ace from that point.
They should have just, like, thrown Kevin Ginkle or something to start the opening spring. Kevin Ginkle,
yeah.
but, like,
yeah.
just somebody random. Because spring training doesn't matter.
It really doesn't.
I think I will stand on this. I think Madison Bumgarner will start opening day just because of the name and the experience there. But, I mean, I believe Zach Gallen's the best pitcher the Diamondbacks have. After that, now that he stated that he's fully healthy, Merrill Kelly will be the third starter. He was having a great season in 2020 until he got injured and had to have surgery. Apparently a surgery where they removed two of his ribs. That's
kind of unexpected.
Weird. Yeah. And then after that, I mean, Luke Weaver, I mean, I this is it kind of for him, I think. You got to prove why you were the main piece, or quote unquote, the main piece in that Paul Goldschmidt trade with the Cardinals. You could argue it was Carson Kelly as well, but Luke Weaver was a major league ready starter. And when we first come over, he performed pretty well. And then injuries got him a little bit. And he was never the same after that. He's got to find his stride again. And I think this is the year he's got to do it. And then to round out the rotation, I think it's going to be Caleb Smith, who was acquired from the Marlins last year for Starly Marte. He's probably the next most experienced guy that they have to put in the rotation. But then a couple guys that could push the rotation are, I think Derek mentioned him earlier, Taylor Widener. I believe he was used as a starter in a couple games last year. He was also used in the bullpen. And then Corbin Martin. I'd like to see what Corbin Martin has. Again, he was injured after coming over in the Zach Greinke trade from the Houston Astros. He is one of the main reports were that the Diamondbacks liked Corbin Martin for a long time, and they've been trying to get him for a while. So I'd like to see, and I think they would like to see what he's got. So maybe he can push in spring training if he's completely healthy for that fifth starter role. I think the first four are pretty locked up, including Luke Weaver. I know what I just said, he's not been particularly good, but I think they give him one more year to prove it, that he can be a quality starter in the majors.
The thing is, the Diamondbacks have a lot of guys, even beyond the ones we just listed, who are starting pitchers, yeah, who are close, if not probably ready for a major league start.
There's Alex Young, Taylor Clark,
John Duplantier, about. Levi Kelly might be close. He's still a prospect. I believe Luis Frias is a starter.
Humberto Mejia.
Riley Smith is technically a starter. There's a lot of guys who could start, and I think that some of that is going to get pushed to the bullpen, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that they are going to have enough guys to that are right there, that are hungry enough and have the skill to start, that it will keep the starting rotation competitive. You know, like,
sure,
there's just that thing about having a guy, you know, ready right behind you waiting, especially someone like Alex Young, who has proven time and time again that he can step into that role whenever. He can be in the bullpen and then be asked to start and still be a quality pitcher when called upon. A guy that's very young himself, you know, he's still developing and we've just seen some moments of brilliance out of him.
Flashes, yeah.
You know, I think, though, that what you're saying is right. I think that the Diamondbacks fleece the Astros. The more we talk about that Zach Greinke trade, because the young talent that is ready to go is really good.
We just need to see it.
I think it's a matter of still developing them, right? I mean, you can't just call upon them and halt their development if they're not ready to be here. The Diamondbacks, I think, are patient enough, especially with what's going to happen this season, to kind of just slow things down and not panic. They're not going to win the division, you know, barring a miracle. The other two teams...
Wait, didn't Bear just say that and you freaked out on him five minutes ago?
Yeah, what's up with that?
It was a bit. But
how dare you, Bear? I'm like,
wait a minute.
But yeah, it's one of those situations where you have to be honest about the scenario and realize that there's no need to rush guys because it's not going to make that big of a difference to surpass some of these other teams that are really talented.
I heard Mike Hazen say last week that the bullpen pretty much needs to be remade every offseason. That seems to be their philosophy.
And they haven't had the same closer since the Hazen crew has taken over.
I would say we've had mixed results over the Hazen regime, his tenure here in Arizona. But here's what we know. Here's what we predicted. The eight guys that we have making the team are Joaquin Soria, Tyler Clippard, Stephan Crichton, Yoan Lopez, Alex Young, you talked about, Kevin Ginkle, Travis Bergen, and Kaiuri Maya. let's talk about those eight, though, because there's even a move today that already kind of debunks what we wrote here. And this is the most difficult part because there are a lot of names that could make the bullpen for the Diamondbacks this year.
Sure, absolutely.
We know Joaquin Soria will make this team.
Yep.
He is the most expensive. They got him in free agency. He is by far the longest tenured major league closer and reliever that they have. An experienced closer. One of the best maybe of the last decade.
He's almost as old as me.
Well, that's scary.
You're pretty old.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
And you're really old.
Right.
The other one, Tyler Clippard. We know Tyler Clippard will make this roster. They just signed him. Today it became official, and we found out that with him being signed and added to the roster and Luis Frias coming back from injury, they actually DFA'd two of the guys that we currently had making the team, which was Kaiuri Maya and also Travis Bergen. The reason that we had Bergen making the team was because he's a left-handed pitcher. And they don't have any lefties. All they had
was Alex Young, who might have to start.
Right now on their depth chart, they do have Taylor Widener as a reliever, so he would be one. And Kevin Ginkle.
Is Widener a lefty?
I'm wrong. I was looking at that wrong. No, you're right. Alex Young is literally the only lefty besides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Besides it. Bergen.
Bergen's
who
a lefty.
Who has major league experience?
Bergen's a lefty. Ryan Buchter, who they signed on a minor league
deal.
That's the only
is
other
a lefty.
Again, not on the roster.
But, right. Yeah.
But neither is Bergen now anymore. So it doesn't mean they won't make the team, but getting DFA'd isn't a great sign, I wouldn't say, for them. But then Kevin Ginkle, he's been on the team for the last couple of seasons. Yoan Lopez, same sort of deal. And then Stefan Crichton was the best reliever in this bullpen a year ago.
By the way,
we know he'll make the team.
He might be the best interview in the
Stefan
locker
Crichton.
Room. Oh yeah, I can tell. Not that he's going to get himself in trouble, but he does not give canned answers. That guy truly
doesn't
speaks
have a filter.
Oh, he's awesome to speak to. I mean, his interviews are great, and he's just very honest. I think he was asked about the closer position, and you know, everybody he goes, everybody wants it. It's the you know
he
it's
was
the
great.
Premier position in the bullpen.
Yeah,
whereas
yeah.
everybody else gives kind of the PC answer about well, if it's you know given to me or if I earn it or whatever. But you know, he also knows that that's. Probably not going to happen now that Soria's on the team.
Right.
He's okay with it. And basically, he's happy to step in whatever role that Lavolo asks him to.
He was great in the closer role last year in the back half of the season, but it's like 20 innings.
Right.
He pitched, I think, 26 innings last season.
Again, such a small sample size.
Really,
you can't
it is.
Trust the bad or the good from last season, really.
But I expect the back end of the bullpen to be in some way, shape, or form. Joaquin Soria, Tyler Clippard, and Stefan Crichton. Am I crazy?
No, you're not. I think Soria is, whether they want to call him the closer or not, or they want to name him the closer, I don't know what they... Torey Lovello seems against that term anyway, for the most part.
They hate the term closer.
They hate it.
Well, like, you have one guy in your bullpen who's been pitching for 14 years as a dominant closer, and you're not going to call him the closer?
Joaquin Soria will be pitching in the ninth inning when the Diamondbacks have a lead. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And then Tyler Clippard, by the way, not his first go-around with the Diamondbacks either.
Right.
Signed here in 2016, then was traded at the trade deadline to the Yankees, I believe.
Yes.
And he's just nothing but consistent. He's a really good reliever, and he's been doing it for a long time. I think he's definitely in the mix for the late inning reliever too. And I wouldn't rule out Yoan Lopez because he's got the stuff. I think he's got the attitude for it. He just needs to put it together.
I agree. We've seen, again, when we talk about moments of brilliance, there was a significant period of time of brilliance from Yoan Lopez. What was it, last season or was it 2019? I think it was 2019.
I think 19 was his better stuff.
Right.
Last year doesn't even feel like it happened.
That's why it's like, so hard it's to just, even think about
it
stats.
It felt like it was maybe 3 weeks long. Like I can't even remember some like most of the things
Well, because
that
in 3 weeks, the Diamondbacks were already out
it's
of
true.
It as far as the season
right.
goes. But,
there are some other names, by the way, that could pop up on this list. We talked about a couple starters like John Duplantier. Riley Smith is technically a starter, but he was a reliever last year. Again, super small sample size. He was super good, though.
We talked about this last week, but J.B. Bukauskas is also a name that they threw around as being one of the guys that is a young starter that will be moved into a reliever role for shorter stints. So he's
another guy from the Greinke trade that they need
we
to see.
Yet.
They need to see it.
Fleeced him.
I would love to see. Okay, so.
Well, no, but I don't know if we know that yet.
We know that. Come on.
So today,
I'm calling it.
With these moves, with Clippard being signed and Frias coming back and them DFAing Bergen and Mejia, if Bergen and Mejia are out, if we're led to believe that based on today's moves, then who are the two that you guys add to this list? I would say Bukauskas has a shot, and I would love to see it. They just don't have any evidence that it's going to work out.
Is Buchter on your list?
Buchter, Chris Devensky, and Ben Heller all signed minor league deals. Those guys are all older veteran players.
I think Buchter. I think he's a lefty.
Yeah.
He's a lefty.
Just because he's a lefty.
Just because he's a lefty.
Yes, you need lefty.
That's why I put Bergen on the list.
Right, and that's the only reason why I put him up.
You don't need the lefty specialist as much now because they put that stupid rule in where relievers have to face at least three batters.
True.
But
that's very true.
Left-handed
true.
Relievers are still really valuable.
And Buchter has a career 2.90 ERA, so he had a bad season again in 2020, but that's 2020.
2020 was a bad season. The Dodgers
won the
World Series. I'd say,
based on 2020, though, if that means anything at all, I would say Riley Smith and Taylor Widener probably have the edge over other people just because of the experience.
And I think, too, a guy, like I keep saying this term, they got to see what he's got. They need to see what John Duplantier is. They need to know what
they're
he is.
They're running out of time on him.
Yes, they are.
They really are.
And they need to know if he's a part of the future of this team.
He's feeling
and
a
he could be a possibility for a middle relief slot too.
he's feeling a lot like R.G. Bradley.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he was the starter of the
prospect.
Future, top prospect.
Yep.
He's come
Braden
in.
Braden Shipley, same thing.
Braden Shipley, he's that's a good name,
he's
too.
He's had some
Aaron
good
Blair.
Starts, but he didn't necessarily...
You're shaking your head on Aaron Blair.
I'm just getting flashbacks of Shelby Miller.
Yeah, well, there was that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's... Oh, we got fleeced on that one.
Yeah. Oh, you think?
No kidding.
We spent over 30 years talking about it.
You remember that one? But no, I don't know. It's
I can still see Shelby Miller scraping his knuckles on the ground.
There's plenty of opportunity here, and I think the one thing the Diamondbacks went out and did was make sure that they didn't put themselves in a position to have this bullpen consisting of young, unproven pitchers like they had last season. They had hardly anybody that they could go to and rely on. And, you know, there were guys that stepped up, like Ginkle and Crichton. Those were guys that came kind of out of nowhere and were just solid for this team anytime they were asked to, you know, appear. Outside of that, there wasn't a lot of consistency, and I'm glad that the Diamondbacks addressed it.
They brought in a lot of veterans. They might be on minor league deals and not on the 40-man roster, but there's a lot of veteran reliever players now in this system.
And I've seen a lot of major league players talk about how much, you know, being around certain guys that have experience meant to them.
Yeah.
Either guys right now that are very good and talk about being around, you know, those players, or, you know, people even now who are thankful that they have these vets on their team that they're still learning from. That's one thing that the Diamondbacks definitely have, is a nice mix now of the future, you know, young talented guys in there with guys like that have 14 years of experience in this league. That's not easy to do at a high level for that long. You know, baseball's just such a weird game that you can be an elite pitcher for two seasons and then never pitch at that level ever again. I think that they brought in guys, when you look at the bullpen guys that are consistent throughout their career. Even like I said about Buchter, when you look at his career, he never really had above a 2.8 ERA with the exception of last season. So last season, you kind of write it off and hope that he can come in and be a lefty that has been as consistent as he has, you know, in his career.
Mm-hmm. Let's have a short conversation about the interesting thing that Fernando Tatis did with his brand new mega deal. It's called Big League Advance, and I know, Derek, that you have a hot take on this, I'm sure.
It's just wild to me. Explain
what it is.
Okay, so
before
we get into it, what Big League Advance is, they call themselves an industry leading predictive analytics company. But really what they are at their core, and what we found out based on Fernando Tatis and his deal with them, is they are a company that assists young athletes. No, it doesn't matter what sport. It's not necessarily just baseball. But they assist young athletes who are struggling because they are in some sort of minor league deal, or maybe not even signed. Maybe, you know, a free agent that hasn't signed to a team yet. Or, you know, a young basketball player maybe in the D-League or something like that, right? They give them, based on their analytics on them as a player. So they analyze their, you know, their game, their growth potential, and they make them an offer financially to take out a loan that helps them sustain that period of time where you're an unpaid or very lowly paid athlete, like a lot of minor league players are in baseball.
So you get the money now to live comfortably while you're in the minors. And then if you have future earnings, I assume there's a payout.
That's exactly what it is. It's based on how much you borrow from them, how much they advance you, and how much growth potential that they see in you, right? So if you are a player that, you know, has is a blue chip athlete like Fernando Tatis,
right? Yeah.
They are going to give you more, but they are going to also expect a decent percentage back for what they advance you. So the odd part about it is, I know how big of a deal being able to properly train as an athlete can be, right? So in the case of Fernando Tatis, he took out this money in order to have a nicer apartment, to eat better, and to get a personal trainer, as well as to help him back in the Dominican Republic, in the Dominican League, like have a trainer, have just more assistance with his career, right? When we look at the player he is now, the one thing you can't really quantify is how much that money and that additional support that he got from that money helped him become the player he is today. Right now, he landed this gigantic mega deal. So based on this analytics, there is a huge percentage. Basically, reports indicate that he owes the company $26 million.
Based on how much he just got paid in his new contract, $340 million or whatever it was?
So, you know, the way it works is if you take out a smaller amount, they ask for a smaller percentage of future earnings. But if you take out a larger amount, it's, you know, if you take out like $250,000, it's like 5% of your future earnings. Huh. If you take out a $500,000, it's 10% of your future earnings. This could very well be perceived as predatory lending. There is so many red flags here. When
sounds
it comes
like they assume all the risk.
They really do, because the one catch here is that if you don't, if you borrow from them and you don't make the major leagues in whatever sport that they are supporting,
you don't hit it big. Yeah,
you don't hit it big. You don't have to pay that money back.
Huh?
So you walk away.
That's really interesting,
right? But there's the other factor of it, that this is still a lending situation. So they are not going to come over and give Derek Montilla $500,000.
They have to believe in you.
For the purpose of...
And no one would believe in you.
I'm almost turning 40. And
there's the age. I knew we would get it by the end of the podcast.
I want to get a single A deal, right? So that way I can just kind of get with Big League Advance and get paid.
So you said he owes them $26 million?
Roughly.
Dang.
So that would be...
That worked out for them.
That could be either a between 2025 and 2028, one of those years' salary.
Wow.
Because between that time, he's making $20 million, $20 million, 25, and 25.
You know what interests me the most about this is I would love to know how many baseball players they do these investments in and they determine those guys,
right,
and how much they're giving them. Because if they got in on the ground floor with Tatis, Tatis was not a home run prospect. He was not a... I mean, I think you called him a blue chip earlier, Derek. I think we all think that about Tatis, but the truth is he was a scrawny little shortstop who was in the Chicago White Sox system and got traded for James Shields at the end of his career. Tatis was not an A-plus guy from the get-go.
That's a very good point.
And I wonder where they got in with him.
Well,
was it early, or was it after we kind of knew, whoa, this guy's going to be something?
It had to be while he was in the minors. So he could.
But he had different levels in the minors.
No. But
he came
just
in
saying,
really young.
I'm just saying, though.
He's like 17, right?
Yeah.
Right. That's the part of it that's predatory. You know, a lot of these guys are young. They don't have an understanding of the significance here.
But his dad also is a longtime major leaguer.
That's a great point. I will also say this in favor of Big League Advance. A baseball player cannot go into a bank and go, hi, I would like to borrow $250,000. And they go, okay, well, what kind of income verification? Well, it's funny you say that. I work part-time at a moving store, and I'm also a minor league baseball player. But let me tell you, one day I'm going to make $340 million.
Right.
And when I do make that, I'm going to come back here. I'll pay you 10 times $250,000.
That's why I'm interested to know when they get in with these guys and how many guys they're invested in.
Right.
And for how much.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're ever going to know that,
because
that's kind of their business.
I think
it's interesting, though.
Yeah.
The thing is that
they'll never release that stuff, I don't think.
The one thing I feel about with this company is that they're very careful to kind of talk about what they are. You know, they call themselves an industry leading predictive analytics with a variety of application within the sports world.
They're an investment group.
Okay. You just couldn't be more vague.
Yeah, you're an investment banker.
They're a hedge fund.
Hedge fund, what they are.
Yeah, pretty much.
They're a hedge fund, which, as we've seen in the past, can be ruined by GameStop.
Okay.
GameStop
didn't ruin it.
Reddit guys, right? It can be ruined by Reddit.
We're getting into things I don't understand.
Nobody does.
Well, and that's the thing with Big League Advance is
we don't understand.
We don't understand it. And I will say
I want to, though.
It seems like the thing that you don't want to get wrapped up in when it comes in sports. Just this looming company that you owe money to that's going to take a percentage of whatever huge contract you get, right?
It feels dirty. It feels like the guys who go after NBA prospects.
Correct. But
just so that they can be their agent and get 10% of the contract or whatever.
What we're talking about here is $340 million. So we shave off that, let's just say the $40 million portion, and say he gets $300 million. That is still $300 million.
Right.
I couldn't spend $300 million if I tried.
Oh, yeah. It's worth it for Tatis.
Right.
And for them, it's super worth it. And that's why I'm wondering, like, of that $26 million, how many players can they invest in now that they get that $26 million
for Tatis? Absolutely.
You hit it big with one, and all of a sudden that opens a ton of doors for them. So it's interesting.
You know, mission statement on this is our goal is to help minor leaguers make it to the major leagues by providing economic security. We offer a financially beneficial platform for both players and investors. Huh. When you look at this deal, you can't argue with that, despite the fact that it does look like Tatis gave up way too much money.
But how many of them are hit it big like that?
And again, how can you quantify a personal trainer, eating better food, and having a nicer apartment.
By how much I pay them.
There's a lot of things there. Well, I'm just saying, how can you quantify that in his career how it helped his career?
It's impossible.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You just never know.
They could just say, hey, look, the money we gave him made him more successful.
I mean, minor leaguers, there's a lot there, right? I'm not joking that some of them do work a part-time job for extra money. That can factor in. Not to mention the fact that staying at home and eating your own food can prevent a lot of things, including you spending a bunch of your money, as well as you being someplace that you shouldn't be, you know, and getting into trouble potentially. You know?
We don't know how to quantify that, but I'm willing to bet that Big League Advance is willing to tell you how impactful they were on growing his career.
They have spreadsheet after spreadsheet of how much that
lawyers
you know,
lining up to tell you how great Tatis is because of them. Go check out at ArizonaSports.com. We have our Ain't No Fang podcast predictions of opening day roster for the Diamondbacks.
Which Steve's already wrong.
Go and look. Yeah, I'm probably already wrong. But
again,
they could still make the team.
Yeah.
It's just less likely.
Right. And Dalton Varsho is going to be the starting
pitcher.
Plus,
I took on the bullpen. That was hard.
I know. Yeah,
what
that
did you have,
long.
Like, first base? Yeah. I mean, come on.
What'd you do, Bear?
You let us pick first. I purposely stayed away from the bullpen.
Yeah, I noticed I got that with my last pick.
Yeah.
We thank you so much for listening. Go check out the article. It's up right now at ArizonaSports.com. And we are the Ain't No Fang Podcast. I'm Steve Zinsmeister. That's Derek Montilla. Cody Fincher as well. The Ain't No Fang Podcast can be found at ArizonaSports.com and on the Arizona Sports app.